Welcome to Grand Heron International's Let's Rumble, Let's Ramble, our monthly live broadcast where two of our professional coaches select a relevant and thought-provoking topic to rumble over. And of course, we broadcast that live on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook. But if you're listening to this episode, it's because it's been converted into an audio podcast for your listening pleasure. We hope that you will enjoy today's topic.
Hello, this is Evita here, and you are listening to Let's Rumble, recorded live on July 28th, 2022. This is our first episode where we will debate the value of the 360 development tool. Joining me here today is Kim Miles, a professional certified coach and a mentor coach. So let's begin. Whereas 360 feedback tools are commonly used in leadership development, be it resolved that they can change the lives of people for the better. Kim, you are arguing for this. You have about 5 to 7 minutes. I will then provide some counter arguments so that we can deepen our understanding of the use of this tool. So sit back, enjoy, and join us at the end of our debate with your thoughts and questions. Over to you, Kim.
Thank you so much, Mirella. I am very excited to be here with you today and talk through the 360 tool as something that can be of benefit to my clients and to others' clients. There are three main topics or main points that I would like to make around this. And the first one is that a 360 tool is oftentimes the best way to provide confidential and comprehensive information about a leader from others and their experiences with those leaders. They may be perspectives and experiences that the leader never receives otherwise. Oftentimes, leaders operate in a way and manner that really does have an impact on all of the folks that they engage with. And it's often that they don't get the feedback that they need. And so this 360 allows that confidentiality and allows people to share their experience and their perspective. The second thing that is a huge benefit is that the 360s encourage conversation around specific leadership competencies and expectations. There's things like communication that may be spoken of or talked about, but other specific leadership competencies that may not be identified as a critical skill are competencies like innovation, risk-taking, problem-solving, delegation. These are topics that while oftentimes leaders know that they're competencies that are necessary, they don't receive feedback on how well they're doing in those areas. And a 360 tool does allow specific feedback around those areas. Third, and this is probably the part that I like most about a 360, is that it does have the opportunity to increase accountability of not only the participant or the leader who is receiving the feedback, but also their manager. We know that managers have a role to support the development of leaders. Those managers need to be able to hold those leaders accountable and be accountable themselves. And so when a 360 is administered well, things like the leader gets to choose who they receive feedback from. As well, the manager can recommend folks who are going to be providing that feedback. Leaders oftentimes can get and communicate with their raters, asking them to provide that candid observation. They also can share some context and say, I'm working on my development. Can you please help me? So these are all critical elements to this idea of being held accountable, of having that participation from the manager with the leader as they go through the 360 process.
So I jotted down those three points, and there is definitely so much value there. And since you and I both agreed that I would come in with counter arguments so that we can once again, really go into a debate so that it broadens understanding even for our listeners. There is a lot of truth, be it in the way in which we experience our clients and the way clients experience the entire process of the 360 feedback. And some of that truth has also been replicated in research as far back as the late 1990s up until today. It has been seen that when people receive feedback, whether it be for performance and for development along the lines of competencies, it's been clear that as long as the gap between how the individual perceives themselves along the lines of competencies, if that's the case, versus how others see them, as long as the gap is not too wide, it does encourage behavioral change and it does encourage engagement. And then the second thing that they've also noted, and that's just in research, but you and I have seen this, we've heard this kind of conversation from our clients, is the accuracy of the data. So the greater the gap between how the individual sees themselves along those competencies versus how others see them, as long as that gap is malleable for the individual, they start to believe the accuracy of the results. As the gap widens, then they start to question it. And that's where, you know, professionals like ourselves come in and help them walk them through. So here are my counter arguments, and these are just features, whether it be features that belong to the human being, features that belong to the corporate context, that I think we ought to be more aware of and potentially find ways to address if we are to increase the value. The first is corporate culture, a culture that uses the tools to point out a very specific behavior in the individual, either because the manager doesn't have the courage to give that feedback, so they're going to use this tool for that, or they're using it to build a file on the individual, or they're using it for promotion purposes. It kind of hinders the psychological safety that coaches want to see around this tool. It kind of lowers it, and then we have other issues that will emerge. Some of those issues have to do with human tendencies. So the very first factor that I feel can, in fact, lower the volume, if not in the heads of people, but definitely in how it's perceived, is the corporate culture. The second one it's more along the lines of human tendencies and what exactly are we measuring? Do we really believe that human beings have accuracy around how we observe other human beings? And we know, because again, I go down the social scientist approach, they've seen that we can't, as humans, hold a specific characteristic such as trustworthiness in mind objectively. We tend to project ourselves onto that. We also get carried away by our own unconscious biases. And it depends how we believe that concept has to be observed in the world out there, and who are the people that ought to be more trustworthy than others. And so there is this effect that happens when people are asked to evaluate people, even on competencies such as problem solving, and I'll put in there the trustworthiness component, where we're not quite sure what's going on. We're not quite sure what exactly is the person measuring. Researchers call that the idiosyncratic rater effect. That is real. And I'm not quite sure it's explained away by averages to the mean. I'm not sure about that. The other inherent human tendency that comes to mind is, are we really doing an absolute comparison, for instance, of Kim? We're not. And none of us can hold that concept of trustworthiness in the universal approach. In other words, we don't know all the different ways in which trustworthiness can be observed in the world, and nor do we have measures on every single human being in our mind to be able to really compare Kim. And I get it, we're all making relative comparisons at that point. I'm comparing you to my worldview of trustworthiness and the behaviors that I have come to see to be trustworthy, and I'm comparing you to my network. And so whose relative comparison are we going to agree? Again, we tend to say, well, it's averages to the mean. Fair. However, what do we do when the actual behavior trustworthiness is presented to a human being in the negative way? So I jotted down two examples. For instance, I can word trustworthiness as an item negatively with hides what they think and hesitates when communicating. Or I can word it positively, is open and honest in communication. So now if I take the human being, who is already tuned in to protect the self and the human being who is only going to make relative comparisons, and the human being who is indeed riddled with unconscious biases, and now I present a negative worded item for trustworthiness, there's a good chance that I'm going to go middle of the scale, which is a 3. There's a higher likelihood that you're not going to rate yourself as a 5 on that item. And so when the results come back to you, we have a gap. And we know we've experienced this in real conversations, and research supports that the wider the gap, the harder it is for people to take these results and do something with it, something positive. And I guess the last one I want to bring into our conversation, which perhaps is just a blend of all of this, is readiness. There's nothing any coach on the planet can do. There's nothing a manager can do. There's nothing any other senior leader can do to move the person to want to change. If the individual is not ready to learn, is not motivated to recognize these human tendencies and choose, how am I going to move forward in my life as a leader? We're not going to see change. So how do we get to the readiness of the individual, potentially even before 360 is put into place, coupled with corporate culture being the way it ought to be to increase psychological safety, coupled with the attention that we ought to be putting towards the way in which we word these items, and in recognizing all of these human tendencies. So all of these, I feel at times, often, can lower the value of a 360 development tool.
Marella, you bring up some really great points. And I recently worked with a client who, from a readiness perspective, after providing the debrief, I do question whether he was really ready to make the change. However, when he received the 360 feedback, there were some really interesting findings, and specifically, what he received from the raters who were his peers and his direct reports and whatnot. They rated him on a scale of 1 to 7, somewhere between a 4 and a 5. Mm. And he rated himself also somewhere varying between a 3.5 and a 5. And his manager, though, rated him much lower. Mm. And when we were doing the debrief, it was really interesting because this leader had never received feedback from his manager that he was not meeting expectations. So this was, you know, to one of my points, it was an opportunity to not only hold the leader accountable to the competencies that were expressed on the 360, but also hold the manager accountable to start having those conversations with the leader. It was an opportunity for the manager and the leader to sit down and the leader to say, I have not heard this information before. And for the manager to have a response to that, because I'm not in the leader's day-to-day world and whatnot. So for all I know, the manager may have provided that feedback, but in a manner or using words that was not as direct as what the 360 revealed. So in this case, there's that point that could be made in terms of the accountability. But then also, I think that it was a way, if the manager truly did feel that the leader was underperforming, this was a way to bring that forward in a more confidential manner. Now, mind you, the manager themselves, that information for the 360 that I use is revealed as manager feedback. But let's say this was a direct report. Same information could be revealed, and that would give the leader an opportunity to explore and decide if they were ready to hear that information and then make changes accordingly.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've had those very, I'm not quite sure if the word is awkward, because you feel such compassion for the person in front of you that is receiving feedback of this nature for the very first time. And I guess you can't help but feel compassion for the manager, because it almost goes back to one point that I raised, and that is the manager unable to provide that more direct, specific feedback live and had to wait for a 360 tool to be able to do that. And, you know, it brings back the whole concerns, I mean, one concern mainly, and that is the manager's inability to A, first speak from a place of true observation around those behaviors, and then find a way to pass along a message using behavioral items that in and of themselves may not necessarily paint the full picture that the manager had in their head. And so again, you know, the question for me comes up with, well, what do we do then? Do we focus the leader's mind on what is and choices that they have to move with what is or not? Or do we spend some time educating the manager that's in, the individual that's in front of us around the human tendencies that are inherent in all things that when we evaluate, and definitely a 360 tool captures all of these human tendencies? I'm not sure, because often what I've experienced in those very difficult moments is my client being blocked and unable. They will say the right things. They will say, you know, leave this with me. I want to think about it. And when I follow up in a second coaching session to say, so did you think about it? It depends. I've had some leaders that will fill their minds with all the ways in which they're going to get back. They're going to find a way to prove the manager wrong. And then I've had others that have come in actually quite heartbroken, if I can use that term. They feel that there's no longer that trust relationship with their manager. And so now we are no longer talking about a 360 tool, are we? We're no longer talking about competencies. Now we're talking about a severing of emotional ties that the individual felt they had. And I'm not sure where the answer lies. I'm not even sure if there's a very specific solution here. It just dawned on me as I'm hearing you talk about your experience, how often I've been in that situation. And I can't really say that I've used one approach and has successfully worked. It all comes down to what does my client do the next time I see them, and where does my client want to go?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that the points that you raise make it even more important to understand that the 360 really is that tool, and that because it has the power to not only point to or bring up conversations around competencies, but also emotions and psychological safety and all those things, I think it just points out the criticalness of having a professionally trained coach or psychologist that can support leaders who are receiving the 360 feedback. It is so important to actually have a debrief and to be able to be supported as you navigate your own thoughts and feelings and beliefs as the information is revealed.
I so much appreciate these last words that you said, so that the focus is not just in defending the results, in defending how the manager may have, you know, may have found themselves doing this kind of rating, nor is the role of the coach to hide the client from those results. I've seen both, right? I've seen coaches defending the manager, and I've seen coaches provide so many buffers as a form of support to the leader where the growth is missed. The growth is missed. And I suppose that the other thing that also comes to mind is, you know, again, culturally speaking, how are these things positioned? You know, back to my first comment, how they're positioned may in fact lower or increase the value of these 360 tools. So we're getting a whole bunch of great questions here. Here's a very good one. Do you want to take it? It's up to you. Feel comfortable, Kim. We can go in any direction.
I think we should take the questions, and I'm not sure if I'm seeing the exact same thing. So if you don't mind reading it. And then...
Sure. As a singular tool, the 360 assessments have their benefits and limitations, as you both pointed out. If we wanted to have a multimodal toolbox to raise self-awareness, what else can be added to the to complement these assessments? Wonderful question.
Yeah, Marilla, I would love for you to offer your input first, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. Yes, no problem. So, okay, so Kim and I have both seen many different ways in which these 360 tools are used, and I guess I'll share with you one way in which I've seen it to be quite valuable, and Kim, then go ahead and share what you've seen. So I've seen the 360 tools used as part of a comprehensive assessment developmental package. So it's not just a 360 in and of itself. It also includes other assessments that are readily available to coaches and, of course, easy to be understood by the client. And these could be very specific, either be specific to the competencies that the organization is hoping that the leader gains full awareness of, or it could be far more, in fact, broader to the leader that you want to develop. So now we're looking more at the developmental assessments. And so some of the tools that I've seen as part of the package would include the Hogan, would include the Berkman, may also include the Myers-Briggs, and the list is long, the values in action, for instance. So now what we have is a comprehensive assessment. And when we sit with the client, we're able to do a debrief, and then we're able to obviously try our best to find the silver connector, and then obviously offer up to the individual an opportunity to make sense of all of this. I've seen that, and I believe that seems to be somewhat a lot lighter for an individual to work with, especially when, as I mentioned, there's a much larger gap between how they perceive themselves and how others perceive themselves. So that has been, for me, a way in which I've noticed the value of a 360, at the very least, being sustained. I'm not going to say that it increases, but at least it doesn't harm what we often see without any of that.
Yeah, and similar to you, whether it was in an organization that I was an internal coach for, or when I was vetting the external coaches for those organizations, those tools that you recommend or that you noted, I've seen as well. I've also seen some very behavioral based, even if they're not formal assessments, but behavioral based trainings and or education to support the leader in understanding not only their own behaviors, but other behaviors, so that when they're receiving that feedback, that they can figure out how to have those conversations with their managers or with other key stakeholders and modify their own behavior to have more fruitful conversations. So, you know, behavioral-based tools that are supportive. And I've also seen a lot of, and I've used myself, tools for further and deeper reflection. So reflection about themselves and how do they think about things and what are their belief systems that then when they're reviewing the 360 data, you know, what are those beliefs that are coming up and are those accurate? If they believe that this specific feedback means that they're a wonderful leader or a horrible leader, right, that can really impact how they choose to modify their own behaviors. So those are just a couple additional tools or things that I've seen packaged with the 360.
I think that's so, I really like this last one. I haven't seen so much of that one, but I've seen it used in other forms of training. But I think that is of such great value. Connect the 360 feedback immediately with reflective tools so that the individual can, in fact, work through some of those, as I mentioned, some of those blockers. Because in the end, it is a perception that you may want to have a look and may want some help in working through some of your own irrational beliefs around who you ought to be and how. The next question we have is as follows: how can we encourage open communication without the help of a 360 on both sides? Do you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting when I'm working with a client and they do have these questions that come up and say, "Well, I wonder, what my direct report thinks of this, or I wonder what my manager thinks of me." And when I ask the question, "What have you done so far to get that answer?" It's very rarely that they directly ask. And so
True.
I do think that, from the coach's seat, it is important to truly empower our clients to finding their voice, are being able to articulate it, and being able to ask in a respectful and honoring manner to their situation that they're in. So that is one thing that I think is very helpful, is just encouraging our clients to have those direct communications. The other thing I would say to encourage, feedback when that doesn't happen is to integrate specific feedback tools into your organization. So, for example, the book Crucial Conversations is one of my favorite books. And when you are able to have not only leaders, but individual contributors and whatnot recognize, read that book, then you can start to have pretty open conversations about challenging topics. Those are a
It's
couple ideas I
fast.
have.
Yeah, no, I agree with them. And in fact, it's true. Those things are so valuable. The other book I will put out here for our listeners. So thank you so much, Kim, for putting out the title of a book is Say It Right the First Time. And so it's a collection of different ways in which one can hold conversations, especially if this is an area of development for you. It's worth a read because it is so neatly organized around, okay, so you need to give feedback. Well, here's one way to do it. You need to hold someone accountable. Here's one way to do it. So that is to me of value, being able to read. I guess the other thought that I had as I reflected on this question, imagine if you and I, Kim, could actually paint the ideal situation, wouldn't we want to have everyone in the organization trained on how to give and how to receive feedback in the most productive way? It'll never be perfect because every human being brings their own characteristic to bear upon whatever they learned, but that I think is already a step ahead, so that when a 360 is being kind of put within a specific leadership development program, I feel that people would be more reflective around the items. They wouldn't go middle of the way, and they'd be more ready to hold those conversations. Obviously, that kind of training, how to give and receive feedback, I would like to see it happening before, so that when a 360 finally comes along, there's no real big surprises, so that we can minimize the gap in perception. I think that would be like an ideal way to shift the culture toward giving feedback and learning how to fail forward.
I completely agree with that. Completely agree.
So it does look as if we're coming to the end of our time. This was such a pleasure, Kim.
Yes, absolutely. I really want to thank you, Marella, for rumbling with me on this topic. I certainly learned a lot, especially from your counterpoints to my points. And I would love to thank everyone for being here. This has just been so fun. We appreciate the questions and comments that you shared. For all of our followers and participants today, please visit us at grandheroninternational.com, where you can listen to and download not only this episode, but future episodes. And with a special thanks to our GHI colleagues who have worked tirelessly to make this show possible. This is Kim Miles, and you have been listening to Let's Rumble, brought to you by Grand Heron International.
Thank you so much, Kim. Bye for now.
Bye. Thank you.